You're listening to No Dice, No Problem, a new monthly Asians Represent variety show hosted by Drew Kwan and me, Daniel Kwan, on the One Shot Podcast Network. Check out uncut video and other exclusive content at patreon.com/AZNSrepresent. Are you like a Shark Week fan, or do you watch Shark Week?
It is a thing.
But it's not like a thing you're... Okay. I used to really love Shark Week, and my mom would like tape it on VHS whenever it happened, and then I would just like watch the crap out of it.
Yeah. Sharks are cool. Weeks are cool. But for whatever reason, like...
Not your thing.
It's not even my thing. It's just that Shark Week never entered the zeitgeist of my family structure. So right. I never grew up watching it. So it just wasn't ever a thing.
Oh, okay. That's understandable.
You mentioning Shark Week right now is my mental note of, oh, it was Shark Week. I did not realize
it exists.
This.
And I don't know if it was Shark Week, but it was like, because I always thought Shark Week was on Discovery Channel, but this was on Nat Geo. But they're really like grasping for episodes. Mm, yeah. They were like, oh, there was this one episode where this guy got bitten by a shark, and the whole episode was about whether or not his particular kind of surfboard was sticking to his skin, causing squeaking underwater that attracted the shark. And I was like, God, it's just not as good anymore.
Listen, you love to see it, right? Nat Geo. What's the other one that you mentioned? Discovery. Listen, it's all competition in the marketplace. It's a capitalist dream. Multiple shark weeks
until there's just the Shark Channel.
There's just a monopoly, just Shark Channel, and it's Shark Week every week.
And it alternates between, you know, educational programming and the Meg over and over again.
I
really like the Meg. I really, really, really like that movie.
Is that the one with Jason Statham?
Yeah, and Rainn Wilson.
I've never seen it.
It's actually like, it's really good. It's not it's a high cinema, but it's good.
No, I've only seen the scene where on YouTube where the Megalodon first shows itself and chomps on the other like great white shark.
Oh yeah,
Arcus. Yeah. That's all I've seen of it.
It's a good movie. It's fun. The sequel is coming out. It's based on a book, by the way. I don't know if you
really
know that. The Meg is based on a book. It's based on like a series of books. It is based on a book called Meg, A Novel of Deep Terror from 1997, by Steve Alton. And then there is a sequel called The Meg 2 is coming out. It's called Meg 2: The Trench, and it's based on The Trench, Meg 2, is the book.
What happens when World War I soldiers encounter the Megalodon?
In France.
You know what would make Verdun better? A shark.
Megalodon just flopping around in no man's land?
It's thumping around. You feel vibrations in the trench, and they go, it must be artillery. But there's no sound. It's just like flesh slapping, you know?
Or here's a thought. It's a land shark, and there has been so much blood shed in no man's land that it can swim. Exactly.
Holy shit.
There's so much blood in no man's land that it's made the dry earth like soft and malleable, and it awakens this shark, and it begins swimming. The fin comes out of no man's land, cutting across. Oh,
you know, cool. all I want now from this is I actually just want a like prequel, like a World War I Tremors movie.
Okay, how would you do it? So
there's dirt, right?
So there's
and
dirt.
And there's these creatures, right?
Yes.
And they move through the dirt. And yes. What is World War I if not just a shit ton of dirt?
It's just a lot of dirt. So
it's just a lot of dirt. And all the constant shelling.
Yeah,
awakens
it,
something deep.
It awakens
down.
All of these creatures.
Yeah. It awakens all the Redditors, and they have to get up to the surface again.
So what you're saying is, fuck the whole like, oh, supernatural World War One movies. We want sci-fi.
We want absurd creature horror.
I guess that's still supernatural horror. I guess that's, but we want comedy horror. like Tremors. Listen,
we need more horror comedy.
Set in one of the most gruesome wars of all time, World War One.
Yeah.
I'm actually really into this idea of a land shark.
Yeah,
kind of like that. Like the idea that the bloodshed of the war enables it. I really like that.
The D&D bullet is like one of my favorite creatures of all time. Like I even have the little vinyl dude.
Cute.
For those who don't know, they sell these like vinyl figures of different like chibi versions of different D&D monsters stuff. So I have like the bullet. I have the displacer beast right here.
Oh, cute.
Little cutie. Yeah, I have a silver dragon. I also have the GIF, the hippo dudes. Hold on. I got to grab it. It's all right.
Oh, yeah. I've got that one. Watsy sent that to me when Spelljammer came out.
I think the GIF are stupid, but in this form, they're awesome.
I don't own any of, like, aside from that one that was sent to me, I don't think I've ever bought a D&D figurine like that. Like, I have
not
minis,
a miniature,
stuff,
but
not
like
WizKid stuff.
You never bought memorabilia.
Yeah, there is one that I really want. I want the Thembershoed Funko Pop.
Oh yeah,
I want that shit. That's so cool. Bad. It's just this chonky ass dragon in Funko Pop form. I want that one so bad.
Yeah, but, did not pay full price for any of these. I found them in the Dent and Ding section of Miniature Market. Sponsor us.
We talk
so
about Miniature Market every single episode.
Listen,
every
if
single
y'all don't
episode.
Know, go to Miniature Market for all your miniature marketing needs. They're so good.
Oh
they
my
got
God.
Great sales. They're a distributor, so they sell things cheaper. I am unabashedly fishing for a sponsor. It's fine.
Dude, Miniature Market has an affiliate program coming soon.
What did I just say?
Okay, we'll talk about the Miniature Market affiliate program for No Dice, No Problem. But I don't even know how we got... Oh, yeah, we were talking about the bullet, because you really like that creature.
Yeah, I love land sharks. I love bullets or whatever. I love tremors, you know? I just love creatures that are in the ground that sense vibrations.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
You love Tremors the movie, not Tremors. Like, you don't like the shaking of the earth.
No,
big fan
I
of the earth
listen,
shaking.
I'm not a huge fan of earthquakes unless they're completely digital.
Do you have a favorite sort of horror, because we're talking about horror comedies.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a favorite horror comedy?
Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Okay, that was quick.
Yeah, dude. That movie is so good.
I don't think I've seen it. I think it's the first time I haven't seen it.
You've never seen
it? No!
Okay, you would love it. I know you would love it. You would be all about Tucker and Dale versus Evil. What a good movie.
I'm looking at this right. Oh, it's got Alan Tudyk in it.
Yeah, he's so good.
Ah, okay.
It is, without spoiling, it is a movie about Tucker and Dale.
Uh-huh.
And then this group of your typical horror movie college kids.
Okay.
In what is a huge misunderstanding that turns into a horror film.
Okay.
Because Tucker and Dale are like your classic like backwoods hillbillies.
Right.
Trying to live their simple life.
Okay.
They just bought a cabin or something like that. And they're going there for vacation for the week to just fish and live life. You know, and they're going to fix it up, all that fun stuff.
Right.
But the college kids are going back to this property that they're they think is abandoned. And so they basically, both of them, sketch each other out.
Oh.
And it turns into a horror film.
That's
with
awesome.
And everything looks like an accident. Everything looks like it's purposeful, but it's all just like a bunch of misunderstandings.
But it's all a misunderstanding.
Because like one of the brothers, no, they're not brothers. They're brothers or best friends. Doesn't matter. One of them starts really liking one of the college girls. And so he's trying to talk to her, but he's really bad about talking to girls. So he just sounds like a psychotic, like,
hillbilly.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Completely sketches though. It's so good. You would love this film.
Oh, well we should. I'll watch it. I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah.
I'm torn between two. So there's this movie. Have you seen Arachnophobia?
No.
So it's a movie from the 90s. And the thing it's just about this like small town that's invaded by, they're not like science fiction spiders. They're just like regular spiders, but big spiders.
That's actually probably the worst.
What I really like about this movie is that the spiders are all like, they're not digital, and they use real spiders in the movie. There's a type of spider called the Avondale spider from New Zealand, and they're harmless, but they're very big. They they look like the size of a tarantula. Mm-hmm. And they had 300 of them. And there are scenes where they like crawl along the walls and shit. And what's really cool is that they were able to wrangle the spiders using like heat.
Just scorching butts.
Yeah,
get over there.
Instead of like a sheepdog, they had like, I don't know if it was a dude with like a blow dryer trying to move the spiders. But that's how they did it.
Would just use like miniatures and stuff to make it look like they're huge, like perspective and stuff.
No. It's not like the town is invaded by giant spiders.
Oh,
they're just invaded by big ass real spiders.
They're not using forced perspective to make it look like they're
none
massive.
Of that. No. Okay, so it's like the house is just like covered.
Honestly, I would rather just fight a giant spider. Like a comically large spider.
Right. You just blast that thing in the exoskeleton and then just
for whatever reason, a spider the size of my hand is so much scarier than a spider the size of a car.
Dude, have you seen a spider? So one of my old jobs was filming and photographing arachnids.
Oh yeah, yes, I know about this.
In macro photography. Mm-hmm. And one of the first videos I shot for the Royal Ontario Museum was a test video of a tarantula feeding on a cricket.
Oh yes, you have shown me this. You sent me this video before.
Dude, the thought of a giant spider freaks me the fuck out. A, they wouldn't be able to support the weight of their exoskeleton, but in this hypothetical scenario.
Well, I mean, not with that attitude.
These motherfuckers would grab you and dissolve you and drink you up. Like that would fucking
if you're the size
suck.
Of a cricket.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. That would suck. But even if they were like dog sized spider. Yeah.
Maybe a spider the size of a car is worse than a spider the size of my palm.
Yeah. Cause like I'm thinking about like jumping spiders. Think about jumping spiders the size of a car.
I'd rather not.
Yeah. That shit would destroy you. So Arachnophobia is one, and the other one is a James Gunn movie called Slither. It's got Nathan Fillion.
Oh, I have heard of that.
It is. I love it. It's these alien slugs. It's just like a goofy, campy.
Isn't that one like, of his earliest films?
I don't know. Like I don't know much about his filmography, but Slither is like an older. Oh, that's his first movie as a director. First big movie as a director. But I love that movie. I think it's very good.
That's how like he and Michael Rooker developed a good relationship.
Yeah. Movie is great.
I remember it was either James Gunn or Michael Rooker that was talking. I thought they talked about it in some interview or something.
I'm not sure. I just also know that Jenna Fisher from The Office is in it, and because she used to be married to James Gunn.
Oh.
She was married to him at the time of Slither. Movie is great. It's definitely worth watching. Arachnophobia and Slither are my two picks. But we didn't even, when you and I were planning this episode, we weren't even going to talk about like horror comedy. That is not it. The episode is not Daniel and Drew survive the spider apocalypse or Daniel and Drew fight car-sized spiders.
No, instead, it's about surviving issues at the table during tabletop role-playing games.
Dude, that was a great transition.
That was great. I have a degree.
I am educated.
It's not in, you know, conversational
podcast
transitions.
yeah. Dude, so like heavy stuff, our D&D game ended.
Yeah. You know.
And it makes me real sad. I'm still really bummed.
I am bummed when I think about it.
Yeah.
But it's not dominating my mind, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's partially because my brain, I think, let go a little while ago.
Yeah, and knowing that your brain let go a little while ago bums me out even more. Bums me out even more. So for
this gets so sad all of a sudden.
So for context for the audience, we had a D&D game and we played for like 2 years. And I put a lot of work into it. And like you did too with your characters. And I was like testing out the world for Wandering Blades, which we should talk about at the end of this episode, the Wandering Blades episodes I pitched to you. I put together this world and I had this big campaign and I was testing out basically Dungeons and Asians, and our game just kind of, we were going weekly for a really long time. And then in the summer we went bi-weekly and that killed the game. No,
going bi-weekly didn't kill the game. People just not having, I won't even say the right commitments, but people having conflicting commitments with our game killed it.
I don't even think so, because disagree.
There are plenty of bi-weekly games that survive just fine. Yes. Bi-weekly games, any game that has a longer period, like the longer amount of time. Sorry, I hold up a back scratcher.
Yeah.
Into the camera view. I've just been fiddling with it underneath the camera.
That's okay. I've got a little toy I fiddle with too.
Yeah. The longer amount of time that you have between sessions does inherently pose more of a risk that once you stop, you don't come back, because there's such a longer period of time. If you play every week and you miss one, okay, you're back to, you know, in 2 weeks, or you're back next week rather, right? Yeah. But if you miss one in a bi-weekly game, that's a whole month between sessions.
Yeah.
That's hard to be bought into, you know?
Yeah. So for me, it was like, I think one of the issues was that there were differing degrees of commitment to the game. I think there were people who were like, you know what? I forgot about the game. Or like, you know what? I'm going to eat dinner with my partner. Sorry, I can't play. And then there were people who were like, I'm prepping for this. Or like, I'm developing this character. Or one of the players wasn't feeling their character later on.
Which is totally okay. But in that case, either change something about the character that makes you more interested, or make a new character.
Yeah, and we had
nothing wrong with that.
And we had conversations with this player, like the whole group. We had a conversation about like, hey, do you want to make a new character or do you want to change your class? And they were just kind of like, I'll just kind of, you know, keep trying with this one. I'm like, well, it's not work. And they ended up kind of checking out because they didn't like their character. And they were just, it's almost like they were watching the game as if it were an actual play.
Sure.
And for them, that kind of caused them to kind of fall out of it. We had another player who just kind of just kept bailing or forgetting. We were unfortunately at a point in the story where their character was very much a driver of the narrative. And with them constantly out, it just kind of kept killing each session. And then those who were like yourself, those who were like really committed to the game started to like check out, because why commit when the sessions are going to get canceled or we're not going to play for like a month?
Yeah. You know, dozens of times at this point, it feels, I have told people, you know, that I would really like to hang out with or do stuff with, hey, Listen, I can't do it this Sunday because I have D&D. Sorry, you know, we'll try for a different day, only to find out, you know, day of, sometimes minute of, sometimes completely after the session.
Yeah, literally like an hour after, we're just kind of sitting there like, okay.
I guess these people aren't showing up, so we can't play. Because we have the policy in our group of, it depends on the ratio. Like, it depends on how many people we have at the table, but we had four. And so if one person's missing, the rest of us can play. If two of the four players are missing, then we do not play. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, like I said, I would say no to other opportunities because of this commitment. And then I, you know, I'm here, I'm online, I'm right on time, I'm excited to play. And then two of them just don't show up and don't even say anything.
Don't say anything. That's the thing.
And at this point, like, it's way too late to try to be like, oh, do you guys still want to go do this thing? You know, I'm actually free.
Yeah. You know? Also don't want to be that guy who's saying no and then be like, oh, actually, you know what? I can.
Yeah.
And for me too, like, I was prepping less and less for each session because I was like, it's probably not going to happen. Yeah. It's probably like, we're probably not going to play. So like, I'll just wing it.
Because you don't know where things are going to go, because we keep missing sessions, you don't know what to prep for next. So you just run into, I've prepped all that I can, which isn't very stimulating for the DM brain, at least in my opinion.
Yep, agreed.
So it's just like, you just stop working on stuff. You get out of the flow and the rhythm of play.
And the hard part was that my prep was also my work on like the setting that I'm publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just lost steam on my own creative work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. And then so when we kind of, you and I kind of talked privately, we were like, okay, we should probably say something and, you know, figure out a way to just end this. Let's pull the plug, take it outside, have it look at the flowers, you know, shoot it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, healthy and respectful, honest communication is paramount to any such situation. But, you know, that does not mean that the answer then or the outcome will be, we're still playing and it's all better now.
Yeah, sometimes I don't think that was ever going to be the case.
No.
Because one person who was kind of driving a lot of these absences and canceled sessions just was kind of like, okay, cool. And like, just didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that kind of hurt because it was like, this meant a lot to me. And it's just like, oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, it did bother me that. It bothered me that they were just sort of immediately like, oh, them's the breaks. Like, that's how it goes. All right, bye.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, did the game not mean anything to you? Like, did you just not care? Like, you're not going to even spend an ounce of effort fighting for the game or being like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, but
my bad.
I can do better. You know, can we try to keep playing? You know, or you know, even if it's just a tokenary, you know, response, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
That kind of upset me for a while. But, you know,
I should go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. You go ahead.
I was going to say, I should remind, just as a note for everyone listening, we're all friends.
All there's no hard feelings. There's no hard feelings.
No
hard feelings.
You're just getting the Daniel and Drew vent time version of this.
Yeah.
You know, because we want to talk about the impact that these sort of issues have on people at the table and how these things happen. And so if we were painting an overwhelmingly negative picture of people, that is not what we mean. It's simply that in this particular issue, or in this particular problem, these things were happening.
And you know what? And we decided, well, some of us decided that we would start another game without one person. And that's okay, right? There is a question in the from one of our patrons that we should talk about afterwards. But yeah, we're starting a new game. It's not D&D 5e. It's Pathfinder 2nd Edition. And we're going to try playing an adventure path. Because I've actually never run one like the entire in its entirety. And so we're going to run the Blood Lords adventure path. We're going to start with the first one, Zombie Feast. Good old Geb. And I'm like, I'm pretty hyped about it because I like the idea of, you know, Geb. I like the idea that there is this nation of undead where they don't eat, but they have this like undead labor force that just produces so many resources for other nations. I think it's cool. I like the conversations that are happening in our group about like what everybody's gonna be. I know you're kind of leaning towards a goblin, right?
Okay, so
I want to know what your character's gonna be for this one. Because are you gonna have? Is it gonna be a lighter character than your previous one?
Probably to some degree.
So what are you thinking?
We'll see.
Okay, so what are you thinking right now for your character?
Okay, so I really want to play a goblin. I've never played a smaller playable race in anything really. That at least that I can.
It's Ancestry in Pathfinder Second Edition.
I should know that I wrote for it.
Yeah, you wrote for Pathfinder. We're just gonna get roasted now.
So
James Case is gonna send us an email and be like,
"Send me a nasty DM."
You're cut.
No, he would never do that. there is a ancestry or heritage, whatever the one that you pick that's like a more specific ancestry, but it's called Unbreakable Goblin.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious because it changes your ancestry HP from 6 to 10, which is a huge boost. And you get access to special ancestry feats that like make you just goofily, cartoonishly durable.
Yeah, one of them's called extra squishy.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah,
because you're so good. Like you're like cartoonishly rubbery, and so you could just fit through things better, you know?
Yeah, your rubbery physique makes it easier for you to wedge yourself into tight spaces and more difficult for your enemies to dislodge you. You're just like, I'm not moving.
I'm out of here. There is a later one called Roll With It, which is like a reaction.
Yeah.
And so when you get hit by a melee attack, you can use your reaction to roll with it. And you take the minimum amount of damage possible.
It's
a really good tank option. But the offset is that the enemy can move you up to 30 feet anywhere, like in one direction.
That's so fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Basically, you get baseball batted and you just try to tuck and roll. It is just so funny to me.
And then Unbreakable Goblin the 13 one. And it's so good. Like you get 20 hit points from your ancestry. So you get double of the base one. And then when you don't take fall damage, you're just gonna bounce off shit.
No. I was thinking about maybe playing like an inventor, because the inventor, they can take a class feat that allows them to rocket jump. And I was thinking about just rocket jumping and like just falling, slamming down on people.
You just butt stomp everyone.
Yeah. I just think that's so funny. And I like, listen, for those who have ever listened to me talk about like tabletop role-playing games, what I prefer for characters, I think people know that I don't tend to play comedic characters. I will play them for one shots. I just struggle to give those kinds of characters depth, or what I really want is like a really serious, punchy story. But I want to give it a try. That does not mean the character has to like not have any reasonings or good narratives. He will, but I want to try to be a slightly more comedic or just silly vibe character.
Yeah, like maybe your character, if you go like inventor, maybe your condition is the side effect of something that happened.
That would be fun.
And you, well, I mean, basically you're just Luffy from One Piece. you just turn to Luffy from One Piece, but you're a goblin and you butt stomp everyone. I really like that.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Like you could surprise the enemies at the beginning of a round just by like falling out of the sky. Or if somebody has a real tanky character or a strong character, they could just throw you and use you as a weapon. Actually, I really like that.
The sorry, I was looking up the feet on my phone. That sounds bad.
Which feet?
I was looking.
Oh, looking up the feet.
I'm just looking up feet on my phone while we're podcasting. No, it's the level 17 ancestry feat for Goblin called Reckless Abandon. It's a once per day thing where for the remainder of your turn, if you roll a failure or critical failure on a saving throw against a harmful effect, you get a success instead. Further, enemies and hazards that would damage you this turn roll the minimum possible damage. So what that means is, like, it's just saying you could decide to be just the most reckless person ever and run through the prismatic wall, automatically succeed, and take the minimum amount of damage possible. Bare minimum. It's so funny.
It's so good. Like, you're basically unkillable.
Yeah. And I just think that there's something special about Pathfinder's take on goblins where they allow them to be kind of silly, you know, yeah. And just very funny. Just a bunch of little guys, you know?
Yeah. They're just causing mischief. Like, yeah. The goblins in Starfinder are great. like the space goblins, they're like, all of their lore is that they like stowed away on a spaceship that left Galarian, and then they got to Absalom Station, and then they just basically live in like all of the crevices of the station and shit, and they have like they're just so funny. they're chaos, and yeah, I love them. There is a lot to love about Pathfinder, and I'm really excited for us to start playing. One of the things that I think I learned from our 2-year game was that I love playing games with you. I think it's great.
I love playing games with you.
Can you imagine? Like, yeah, I really hate playing games with you, Drew.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I was gonna wait on this, but can we talk about something real quick?
We should talk right now. No, I like playing games with you. But one thing I learned was that I think that I have a tendency to plan really, really long campaigns. And one thing that I could have done, if we're kind of thinking back on the campaign and its fate, is that I should have been very clear about how I felt about the game at the very beginning, how I wanted it to go like long term. And in order to do that, it would have required commitment from everyone. And I think I should have been clear about that. That's what I feel like I should have done better on my end. Because, it's hard when a game ends, and I'm sure a lot of people experience this, when a game ends, you take it very personally. Because for me, it's like, oh, am I a shitty DM?
Oh,
and
sure. Like,
yeah. Oh, is the story really bad?
I think, oh, am I a shitty DM when I have a good session? Like, yeah. You know, so
I'm thinking when the campaign ends. I do all this TTRPG stuff, and then, man, I can't even run my home game.
I self-criticize to an unreasonable degree when I'm doing well. I think I feel when I'm doing poorly, you know? No, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think you can be blamed for it, because simply put, you were not the reason it ended.
Yeah, but, you know, it's...
I just don't think that communicating at the very beginning that you wanted to run a long campaign would have mattered, because you would think that by year one, we all would know it's a long campaign, right? Yeah. Like
that's true. People are making their second characters after their first ones die.
Yeah. And besides, I feel like that was just the group assumption anyways, was that we were running a long-term campaign.
Yeah, I just don't like assumptions, you know? I like to be, I think it's better to be
clear. You
know
what they say about assumptions?
Don't. What is it? Yeah, don't. but I think this actually brings in a good question that one of our patrons, Miss Mike Michelle, had for us. Michelle asked, how do you adjust when playing with people you love IRL but don't jive with in playstyle? So, good friends, but man, playing RPGs with them is just not something you can do. How do you do that?
So have you ever heard of social hacking?
Oh, tell me more. Tell me more.
Okay. You infiltrate their life. You already have. So you already got an in.
Real cyberpunk here.
Maybe you take their dad on a date, you know?
Okay.
Take their dad on a date. Maybe their mom, but dad's funnier. You worm your way into their family life. Keep in mind, this is most effective when your parents are married.
Okay.
You take him on a date. You wine and dine him.
Mm-hmm.
You get him attached to you. You become his mister or mistress, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You ruin the family life.
Just ruin their life.
Yeah, yeah. You house wreck your friend's whole business.
So the answer to the question, I should clarify, Drew. The question was, you have a friend who you really care for, but their play style is just not for you. So your answer is you fucking ruin their life.
No. You just give them enough stress in their life that's not attached to the game, but it forces them to withdraw from the game anyways.
you sabotage their life so then you don't have to kick them out.
Listen, and in the meantime, your friend is coming to you. They're venting. They're really frustrated. They don't know it's you. They don't know that you're just some unnamed Mr. or mistress, you know.
This double agent
that's
right
fucking up everything. That way you're deepening the bonds of friendship between you and your friend. You're getting your friend out of the game so that you don't have to deal with their play style, and you get a lover.
But do you think that you deepening your bond with your friend whose play style doesn't match with you would make them want to just keep playing the game? Because they're like, oh, I'm spending time with my
friend. We have to go deeper. Okay, so you start going to their job. You start going to their place of business. You wine and dine their boss.
If you get them fired, though, they're going to be like, oh, my day job sucks. My personal life sucks.
Yeah.
My escape is this game. You're just drawing them in more, Drew.
Listen. You have to, by the end of this, you have to create a harem of everyone close to this person.
So that you are the center of everything awful?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a real answer for this question. Because it's
saying mine's not real.
I have one that I have an answer that I've experienced from in real life. Let's say that. I have a good friend who is a friend of like a mutual of both of us who is great. And I'm gonna send you a message right now, Drew, of who that friend is. I've known this person for a really long time. I love them. Their play style matches with mine. Like, I really like the way they play. We have the same tastes. And we were, I was in another game and they were looking for a new player and I invited this person. And nobody else knew them. So I was like bringing in a new friend. And the DM really fucking hated their play style. And like, just held it in.
This person does have a very specific play style.
And it vibes with you and I.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
It vibes with you and I, but like, yeah, the other group did not like this person.
Yeah, but
it got to the point.
But the play style is so specific that I see how it does not vibe with others.
And luckily, my group, we're all adults. The group went to me and were like, our campaign had ended and we were going to start a new one. And they were like, this person can't be in a new one. And I'm like, that's okay. Right. I think for the most part, with the question of how do you play with people you love but don't vibe with in terms of play style, I think the answer is you don't play with them. Right. Because I don't have to do everything with the same friends. Like, I don't have to play only TTRPGs with you, Drew. Right.
I mean, I guess you're gonna, I know, right?
You don't have to do everything with your loved ones, with your friends, right? You're going to have friends who you really love playing RPGs with, and you're going to have friends that you really like playing video games with or board games with. And so for me, it's like, because tabletop RPGs are very intimate, because tabletop RPGs involve like a very, very tight social contract between everyone at the table, I want to make sure that play style is important. Like when we were starting our Pathfinder game, we were like, oh, very clear about, okay, what is the vibe that we want? Do we want something a little bit more chill? Do we want something super serious, like save the world sort of thing? Because we wanted to make sure that A, we both liked each other in real life, and B, we were all looking for the same experience. And play style is very much linked to the kind of experience you're seeking at the table. Yeah. And my, so for,
I was just going to say, my play style is fairly specific.
Yeah.
You know, I am someone who really far and above prefers narrative, and not just like role play. Like, oh, I hate combat. I love combat. You know me.
I play Pathfinder.
I play miniature war games. Of course I love combat.
Yeah.
It's just more like I love narrative and I love themes and I love story arcs and I love role playing and I love character voices and I love, you know, these I wouldn't say to say convoluted, but compelling backstories, you know, that are fleshed out, that make them feel like you're reading a small bio of someone's life. I love all that kind of stuff. So I don't really vibe with D&D or anything else where, like, I don't jive with the play style of we are playing this game as an excuse to see each other, where it's just some casual shit and everyone's more interested in what kind of chips you brought than like what your character motives are.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that play style. I have had games where I've enjoyed that, but it's just not really my thing overall. Mm-hmm. And I know that when to go back to what you said, when it comes to just don't play with them, of course, if you're already in a game with them or they're really excited to play with you in a, you know, upcoming campaign or something, of course, the immediate thought is, oh God, how do I word this? Like, how do I say this to them?
Yeah.
Because how do you word that you don't want to play a game with someone without sounding like kind of an asshole about it? And what if they get mad? What if they don't understand? Well, yeah, they may not understand. They may get mad. But is it better for them to be mad at honest communication or for someone to blow up eventually because you've been playing for a year and you've gotten, you know, steadily more frustrated with their behavior at the table or the way that they play versus how you play, and then that blows up into something that it didn't need to be? What's better? You know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, sometimes it takes you as a player or a GM or whatever to be like, you know what, I'm going to step away from this game. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, it's time to, you know, we'd all be adults. Say like, hey, look, I love you, but I don't think your play style or what you expect out of a game is going to match what is being organized here. And look, if you told me that, I'd be like, cool, that's fair.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I'm not going to chat with you. It's not like you're like, I am terminating our friendship because we're not compatible enough to play tabletop RPGs together.
We can't play D&D together.
We can't
play life together.
Yeah. So no, absolutely. And I'm really careful about who I play games with. Now another solution is if like, hey, you know, they really want to play games and you're not going to, you don't want to have that difficult conversation. Sometimes you just can't. Maybe just play a shorter game. Like, you don't have to get into a 2-year game. Maybe play like a 1-shot, maybe a 2-shot, just to kind of, you know, have that experience, have that memory together. So I don't, you know, sit through it for that. But yeah, I think we all have people who we play games together with, and sometimes their style, it doesn't even have to just be tabletop RPGs. Sometimes their style just doesn't match ours. Like,
and to be fair, if you are not jiving with her play style to the point where you're getting frustrated, chances are that they might be feeling the same way about your play style if it's clashing that much. And they also just don't know how to say anything.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
Because if they know their play style and they enjoy their play style, I mean, of course they will, but if they know what they're about, if they have that kind of self-awareness and that they have that kind of love for the game where they know how they like to play, and then they'll probably know that you're not jiving with just play style. And if they don't have that love for the game, whether that's due to inexperience or simply apathy, then they may go, oh, okay. Oh yeah. You know, they're maybe not necessarily as bought in to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. It might not actually be that big of an issue, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And
or social hacking.
Or you use your Drew's social hacking strategy, or you just don't talk about it and you start a new game without somebody and you just don't mention it.
Yes. The other alternative is to do that.
A secret game.
Listen, you can do that. I would just recommend not going onto your podcast and saying it out loud in a public forum where they could possibly hear about it.
Absolutely. But you know what? It's like the way I see it is that, like, if people want to join our game, we can have that conversation. I'm not saying like everyone be like, Daniel Drew, I want to join your game. That's not what I'm saying. But if like, I have friends. Yeah. If I have friends who are like, oh, I'd love to try playing Pathfinder, or I'd love to try playing D&D or whatever, can I like sit in for a session? We can talk about that. We can have a conversation. But again, everybody at the table has to be on board first. I have tons of friends, like mutuals too, with you, who I would love to like run a game for. Mm-hmm. Love to run a game for. It's just a matter of figuring out the timing and everything like that. Because I don't know about you, but I am super burnt out. And I need a break. Sure. And so our Pathfinder game is all that I can handle right now. And we haven't even started yet. Sure. But I like what I see with this adventure, and I think everyone's going to have a good time. And we're going to take the lessons and the experiences that we had from the previous game into this one. And so we're going to make sure we do more like vibe checks, make sure everyone's feeling okay, make sure we're all communicating well, which I think is very important. You good, Drew?
Cool. Hold on. I'll be right back.
Okay. Now, while Drew disappears for a second.
I don't know what's going on. Hold on.
It's okay. I'll just keep talking.
Sure.
I am really excited because Drew's not here right now. He has stepped away, for those who are listening to the audio. But I have booked my plane ticket and hotel for Big Bad Con. That's right. Asians Represent is going to Big Bad Con. I'm going to be staying at Big Bad Con with Emma and Drew, and I'm going to be flying down with Emma. We're going to be there from the 28th of September. We're going to get there at like mid-morning, and then we will fly back the evening of October the 2nd. So we're going to have a lot of time in San Francisco at the convention. And Drew and I have been talking a lot about what we want to do content-wise regarding No Dice, No Problem. And I think our plan right now is to record several episodes of the podcast. One is an episode of No Dice, No Problem in the lobby of the convention. We were going to sit down in the lobby, set up a camera, probably just use like a phone. I have like an actual mobile podcasting setup. We're going to set up there. We're going to sit down and we're just going to shoot the shit. And if people come by and, you know, they want to sit down with us, we will bring them into the conversation. And we're going to maybe do that for like 2 hours, a big No Dice, No Problem special. And it might be called Daniel and Drew Sit in the Lobby of Big Bad Con, or Daniel and Drew Podcast in a Hotel Lobby. Who knows? But I'm really excited about that. We also talked about what we want to do in San Francisco. And we were both really excited about doing something very touristy and actually going to Alcatraz. I've never been. I've been to San Francisco, but I have never been to Alcatraz. And Drew's coming back now, and it looks like he hasn't. It looks like he has an Amazon package. But Drew and I both really like the idea of a No Dice, No Problem episode called Daniel and Drew Go to Alcatraz.
Oh my God. Yes. We were just talking about this.
So I was just saying that, Drew, that we're going to Big Bad Con. We're staying in a hotel together. We're going to do a lobby episode where people can just like come and join us. Yep. And we're going to go.
It'll be a disaster and I love it.
It's going to be great. It's going to be chaos. And we're going to go to Alcatraz. It's going to be.
And we'll never leave.
Daniel, dude, can you imagine Daniel and Drew go to Alcatraz and it's just the podcast is. I'm holding the camera. We got the mics and we're just talking while we're on the ferry going to Alcatraz.
That's fun.
I think that'd be great.
Dude, they have like three different options. They have a day tour, which is like 2.5 hours, a night tour, which I think is a more fun option, which is 2.5 hours, or they have a behind the scenes, which is not all of that, like both day and
you're
night.
You're there for 12 hours.
No, but it's like 5.5 hours and you get to see a ton of the island that you normally don't get to see in the tour.
What would you want to do?
Oh, we all see the issues. We have limited time.
Well, but here's the thing, that at the con, I don't think we're doing stuff in the evening.
You know what? Fuck it.
I feel like we're going to be doing more stuff during the day at the con than we will in the evening.
I feel like the behind the scenes tour would be more fun.
Is that the evening one?
I think it's. No, it's a 5.5 hour one. But I don't know when. Hold on.
It's a lot of time. I don't think we have 5.5 hours. I don't know. I'm very excited for us to, first of all, meet in person. We have never met in person. Fine. I'm excited for us to meet in person, but I'm also really excited for us to just record a whole bunch of content. Imagine if we just had some time to sit in Alcatraz and just Daniel and Drew go to Alcatraz. Daniel and Drew escape from Alcatraz. God. Great. Yeah.
I feel like they won't allow us to sit down and do a whole podcast.
But we could record while we walk.
Yeah, we release a special vlog.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I'm very excited for it. But we should probably plan what we're going to do. I would also love to... I believe that there is a Chinese museum in San Francisco, like about the history of. I think there's a museum and it's the Chinese Historical Society of America. I went there last time I was in San Francisco and it was really cool. Right now, they actually have a Bruce Lee exhibition.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think that would be a fun place to go. But. In general, I'm really happy that we're finally going to be at the same con together. We're going to be doing panels. We should still submit some more things, but we're going to be doing some panels. We're going to be doing live shows.
I'm excited for that workshop. Yes. Should they allow it?
And you submitted that, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. We could talk about it because we're trying to manifest it, right?
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about it last episode.
Yes, when we talk, for those of you who did not listen to the last episode, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, welcome to the show if this is the first time tuning in. But in the last episode, we talked about a workshop that you, myself, and Emma are going to run about world building and creating like your own fantasy culture. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very excited about that. That's going to be a small sort of episode. It might also be cool for us to, and like we had said, do a whole episode. Just doing that, we create a culture right on the spot.
That could be cool.
That could be a lot of fun. I think that's a good No Dice, No Problem. But you and I need to talk about whether or not we want to have guests on No Dice, No Problem.
I'm down for it.
Yeah. I think the
but not
vibe
for the
has,
whole time.
No, I think the vibe has to be right.
I feel like it's a nice, like, 20-30 minute segment.
Okay. Figure out the production side of things. Yeah. I'm cool with that.
Which maybe it needs to be. Recorded separately and then add it on.
Maybe
something depending on schedules and whatever.
Or we just do it as a short video for the YouTube channel. kind of like how Jackie and I talked about the revised D&D monk.
Yeah, that could work.
We could do something like that. But yeah, enough of Big Bad Con. We have one other question.
Yeah, we only talk about it every single
time. Yeah, we talk about it every single time. We have another question from patrons. Jeremy asked, people say play another system all the time on social media when talking about D&D's hold on the industry. But we all know there are many reasons why people stay tied to 5e, including sunk cost fallacy, the fact that this is what their friends play, etc. So Jeremy's questions are, what are the biggest hurdles you both have found when it comes to moving a gaming group to a new system? And two, what would your go-to strategies be for making this shift and helping people experience something new? So let's tackle the first question. Like, what are the biggest hurdles when moving a group from one system to another? Obviously, there is the issue of theme. Right? Because we could say D&D to Pathfinder, but that's still fantasy. What if we were doing D&D to Twilight 2000? Or
that's a huge shift.
Huge shift, right? So first things first is the first hurdle is theme. You need to make sure that the entire group is aligned on what the theme of the game is. If we're going to switch systems, are we switching to fantasy? Because that will, you know, allow us to at least narrow down the systems that we might play, right? So that's the first one, theme. Second one is going to be complexity. You and I have talked about like rules light versus rules heavy and the merits of both. Rules light, I think, is easier to get into, but puts a lot of labor on the facilitator because of the ambiguities that exist within the system.
Yeah.
And then rules heavy, obviously, you have to master the system, but once you have done so, everything is very much handled by the system.
Yeah. I agree. I had a formulation of a thought and then it evaporated.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I hope you find it in the ether. And if you do, just like blurt it out. So we have theme, complexity. In my mind, another one that's very important is lethality. Like once we've settled on like theme, so we're like, okay, we want a fantasy game. We want it to be, you know, not too complex. How lethal do we want this to be? Do we want this, you know, are we going to play like an OSR game where you can die really quickly? Are we going to play Dungeon Crawl Classics and do a funnel where your, hopefully, one of your level zero characters survives to become your level one character? Or are we going to play something that gives you that like power fantasy where you you are for the most part unkillable? I think lethality is a really important thing to talk about because it will further refine your options.
Yeah. Because lethality is something that I feel like people don't think about very much.
They don't, right?
But not everyone. I think a lot of people take for granted the idea that characters die in a lot of role-playing games, but not everyone likes that, you know? Some people don't want their character to die whatsoever, which is totally fine.
A member of our group is like that.
Yeah. For me, I don't mind if they die as long as not even as long as. If they're going to die, I accept it. That's okay. I would prefer, obviously, as a player, I would prefer for my character to not die, or if they are going to, then it has some sort of meaning, you know. But if they beef it because they teleported bad and they're about to hit the surface of water at like Mach 5 and they're gonna die, that's how it is.
I see what that's how it there. Is
and then when I there. Don't die then,
then we kill our D&D game.
Then we kill our D&D game. That's
the last thing that happened.
I got so mad that I didn't die that I killed that I was just like, hey Daniel,
I'm done.
I'm done with the game. No, that's not what happened. But I will say, having experienced this a number of times, a lot of DMs are scared to kill player characters.
Yeah,
which is okay. But like in that particular case, my character is hurtling towards
your character should have died.
The ground. if my character should die, I have no reaction spells. There's no feather fall.
There's literally nothing. No option. Yeah.
Everyone did their best effort. And I think I rolled a die and I rolled real bad.
Real bad. For me, the reason why I didn't kill your character, even though your character should have died, was because I felt like your character dying would have derailed where we were.
Sure.
To the point where it would have been hard for the group collectively to recover. I also think that your character's death would have been the result of a decision another character made, and that player, I know, would not have liked that.
Yeah, that's fair.
The only reason why. I would have been like, he goes splat.
I understand. I just, if there's anything I don't like more than my character dying from something stupid, it's then being saved from
thrown a bone. Oh yeah, I know.
I don't like being thrown bones.
If I'm supposed to die, I am the same. So right now,
if I cannot weasel my way out, don't hand of God and pluck me out of the situation.
Totally. So we have so far theme, then complexity, then we have lethality,
and then after that,
yeah,
you take their dad out on a date.
Oh my God, then you social hack.
So
those are the three obstacles that I find. I'll also say another one, an important one, especially for our group, since you're the only one in the States. Two people are in Toronto, and then one person is outside of Toronto. Another one is accessibility to rules and virtual tools. Because I think for our group, as much as I would love for us to play 3.5 D&D, as much as I would love for us to do that, as much as I would love for us to, play a lot of other systems, I think one thing that has been helpful in kind of transitioning from one system to another is the accessibility of online tools. For us, like moving to Pathfinder 2nd Edition from using D&D Beyond, it has been so easy because we're just using Pathbuilder. Mm-hmm. And I would like to use Pathfinder Nexus when, that thing is fully out. But right now we're using Pathbuilder. And that's been really easy because it helps with any potential hurdles associated with the complexity of Pathfinder.
Sure.
So theme, complexity, lethality, and then access, I think, is really important. Accessibility.
I think also, I don't think people always consider how many players have never read the rules.
Oh yeah.
How many people have just learned by sitting down at the table and the GM and the other player that knows a lot more than everyone else, because they've also played for a long time, have helped teach the table how to play. Because I have played lots of games with lots of groups, and by far 90% of them have been mostly, or I would say 90% of those players were new.
Yeah. And that's why complexity is important, because the GM could be the only one who knows how to play. And then if we pick a complex game, that puts a lot of work on the GM. Yeah. Or if we want just something complex and nobody knows how to play,
then you all have to crack open the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that means you all have to have access to it.
Yeah. So it's sort of like, white privilege.
I'm following.
In the sense, like, in, for instance, the U.S., many white families also immigrated to America and came from nothing. But because of their status as white people in America, they were, over the generations, able to build up generational wealth, knowledge, and other advantages that other people simply weren't allowed to have or to build up. And so that in that particular case, what I mean by this is D&D has the benefit of having a sort of generational transition, or that pass down of knowledge, of there being a shit ton of players and GMs who have gone and then taught new games, new groups who have gone to teach their own, and so on and so forth. And so you just have this collective sphere of knowledge, and you do have it where I might be the GM and I have five players, two of which have played quite a lot, three of which are brand new, but they don't ever need to crack open a book because I've played this game for so fucking long. Do I have it memorized? No, but it's fifth edition. I'll say whatever the fuck
it's so easy.
You know?
Yeah,
it's so easy.
There's also the one other factor is, you know, media. Like, there are so many people who have never played D&D before but are avid Critical Role fans.
Yeah.
And kind of have a sense of how to play D&D just by watching Critical Role.
Or they watched the new film. Or they or they love Lord of the Rings. And, you know, they want that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are familiar with what, or they've seen Stranger Things, right? That's another one.
Yeah.
And they're familiar with what they want out of it. They understand conceptually what it is.
The
but
expectation.
They may not, yeah. They don't have an expectation of a PBTA game that they don't even know. They don't even know what PBTA is, Powered by the Apocalypse, begin with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's just difficult. And so one of the issues that I faced is that my own breadth of knowledge of tabletop role-playing games has been kind of neutered, if just because, yes, I have been playing anywhere from 2 to 5 games a week.
You play a lot.
For the past like 10, 11 years or so, I have played a shit ton of D&D. And so, yeah, there are moments where I do go, I wish I could play something else. Let me just play anything else. But any of my players, whether they're fellow players or they're in my game, they don't feel that way. They don't want to. And it's not because they even just like fear a new game or they don't want to change. They just don't care because they have played an eighth of what I've played. And so they're not burnt out of the system. They're not going, okay, I've done what I want out of this. I've gotten all my fill. I want to move on. They
100%.
Haven't had that yet. They just haven't.
Yeah, for me, it's like same thing with like Magic the Gathering. Like, I love playing Magic the Gathering.
Sure.
But Flesh and Blood is like, it's new and different and it's exciting.
I still only played that one day.
We got to play. Dude, we got to play.
We've also said that multiple times on the podcast.
We have, but we will. And I've just been enjoying learning something new. But sure. I set the expectation that I want to learn something new. I want to suck at something.
Yeah, but I also think that you and I are the personality types that like to learn, and we like to get into new hobbies and go, what's this all about?
There's comfort in not knowing something when it comes to gaming for us. There's comfort in experimenting with a new system, discovering something new.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So to circle back our answers to Jeremy's questions of what are the biggest hurdles you both have found when it comes to moving a gaming group to a new system? Those are aligning on theme, complexity, lethality, and accessibility. And by accessibility, we mean access to tools and rules. The second question Jeremy had was, what would your go-to strategies be for making this shift and helping new people experience something new? And honestly,
go ahead.
No, you go.
So you know how at the mall every year there's a Santa Claus? Okay, so you're that Santa Claus, right?
Okay, I'm that Santa Claus.
You got this position because your new lover, their dad, used to be the Santa Claus, but he's tired of it. His
nepotism.
Back hurts. You get it.
Okay.
You get the job. And then when your friend Jonathan comes up and is like, you know, I don't know what I want for Christmas. You tell me. You'll go, Coriolis. And you go, what's that? And you pull it out of your prison pocket. You hand it to him.
So my go-to strategy for kind of shifting systems is once you've kind of gone through all those steps, right? Once you've talked about theme, complexity, lethality, and accessibility.
Oh, I thought you were talking about my social hacking.
And not your social hacking. I'm not talking about infiltrating their family, then infiltrating their professional life, and then slowly undermining every aspect of
their
being.
Then you become their pastor, you know?
Yeah. For me, it's like sometimes it's not your responsibility to help people experience something new, right? Sometimes, and I'm talking about this not as like a game designer, because I would love to have people experience something new. Everybody go buy Ross Rifles. I'm talking about like with my friend group. Sometimes it's not my responsibility to be like, hey, everybody, you should go and play this game. Or, but if we were transitioning to a new game, I would probably do it incrementally. And the thing that, and by that I mean, I would probably do it over a course of like a couple of one shots. I probably say like, hey, these are all of the, we've aligned on these four things. I have found 2 to 3 games that I think match this. Why don't we play a couple of one shots with these just to kind of get a sense of whether or not we like the system. And once we kind of have found what we like, then that will be our game. And that's the easiest way I could think of it.
Yeah, I when we look at like Twitter discourse, my favorite thing in the world.
Love it.
When we look at just how we talk about this, I think in the community, I think we naturally come at it from a, I think the people who talk about this most often, who talk about, my players, they're saying my players, because they're the people who talk about this. They're the GMs. They're the DMs of their D&D group.
Yep.
I feel like, you know, this is anecdotal to be fair, but I feel like I never really see players going, my game group, my GM never wants to run anything else, because players don't care, and not in a negative way. They just don't feel the same. They're not so keyed into the system and so constantly inundating their life with it in that way that causes them to hate the system and want to move on. The thing, yes, D&D 5th edition has its flaws, but the issue is it gives the players enough of what they want that they don't care to move on to something else.
That's a good point.
So while yes, as the GM, as the person organizing things, yes, sometimes we can get bored with the system and we want to move to other stuff, but it does come from its own sort of self-interested or self-centered reasoning, because you want to move to a different system. Your players do not. And that both of those are okay. It is totally okay to be bored with this, with D&D 5th edition, just like it's totally okay to be like, I'll only eat fettuccine alfredo for the rest of my life. You know? It's, what the fuck? What'd you just go ugh for? That shit fucking slaps, bro.
You only eat that for the rest of your life?
I could, easily.
And nothing else? You give up everything else.
After maybe 40 years, I'll be tired of it.
But you're going, like, to give up all of the other... Dude, I know you like food because you talked about all these different Asian dishes you like to eat. You give up all of that? You like fettuccine alfredo that much?
So then you have to become their personal chef.
Oh my God.
And when you do...
Anyways, like, sorry, go back to your thing.
To be fair, the food to D&D is not a great analogy. But the point still stands, though, is that when we talk about this, we are thinking about what we, veterans of this whole business and people who revolve their entire world around this stuff, we're coming out from our selfish perspective, and not selfish in a morally bad way, just a how I feel way, without taking into consideration that players, just most of them don't care, you know? And what can sometimes happen, I feel, is that the frustrations of the GM can sometimes just sour the whole bunch.
Yeah. Fair.
You know, I've seen that in some games, not in recent years, but in years previous that I had played in.
So what I'm hearing is that when we're talking about helping people switch to another game, one thing you kind of have to think about is, who are you switching games for? Is it you, or is it actually the group? Is that kind of what you're saying? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Are you helping people who don't really want to be helped. Like, you know, to be fair, help has a positive moral connotation. Yeah. You know, but do they want to do this? And I agree with you with what you said earlier. I do think that smaller one shots, you know, are good. For instance, a lot of games are coming out with quick start boxes.
Yes.
I would heavily suggest those because those rules are a bit more pared down. It's all prepped for you. So, because for many of us, we're also trying to get into these games. We've never played it. We just want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so these quick start boxes are a little bit easier. I remember when some of my friends from Utah, they came to St. Louis and visited me for the week. And one night we just went to, was it Miniature Market?
Sure. It's always Miniature Market.
Shout out to them, you know. But we bought the Call of Cthulhu quick start guide for like $20. And I ran it that night and it was fun. It wasn't perfect. You know, I didn't know the rules. Sometimes I was reading the rules as I was, you know, yeah, trying to deliberate. But it was fun. It was fun. And we got the gist of the setting or of the system rather.
Right.
And if it wasn't for the fact that we live multiple states away from each other, I would have been like, yeah, this would be cool. Let's continue playing. You know, let's play next week. That's cool.
Right. Of course.
Because that then establishes a buy-in.
Yeah.
That establishes that this is something. Because if I asked most of my players at D&D to name another system, I don't know if they could. And not because that's a bad, it's not a bad thing. They just know, they just have this thing and they're fine with this thing.
That's what they're content with. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like saying, oh, the fact that you own a Honda Civic's wrong. I need to help you get Ford F-150 or something, some bullshit.
Yeah, it's not our responsibility to get other people to play other games.
Yeah.
Within our friend groups.
They have, and if they enjoy it, they enjoy it.
Yes. I always preface that with in our friend groups. Because if you're a publisher, if you're a creator, absolutely, I get it. It's a different conversation. Yeah. You need to get people to play your game. Go buy Ross Rifles. But totally understanding.
This is not to say that the frustrations are not valid. You know, and of course, there are many, basically any tabletop role-playing game out there that is not Dungeons & Dragons would benefit immensely from people leaving and playing their game.
Yeah,
I do wish there was a more even distribution. You know, I wish there were, I wish there weren't so many HIO games released that people buy because they're in the industry and they like it, but no one plays it because everyone still just plays the same two or three games. I wish it was different. And I'm not saying it can't be, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't try. I just think that we don't always keep in mind that most of these players just do not want to play another game.
100%. And I mean, we saw that with the OGL thing. A lot of these people who are like, oh, we're going to leave D&D. We're never going to play D&D again. And they're back to playing D&D.
Yeah, and it is not because they love WotC. It's not because they have any loyalty to them. It's just because this is the game that I play. This is the core. This is the core memory maker with my friend group.
Yeah,
the thing that I love.
And who am I to take that away from that person?
Sure. You know. So I just sometimes think that we have to think about it a little bit differently. And so, like, I would really like to play some other ones. But I think it would be best to just do some one shots. For instance, to be fair, this is not a long-term campaign game, but I would really like to get my players into playing 10 Candles every now and then.
Oh, God. I constantly want to play that game because it's just so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I talked about, and see, so to your thing about themes, my players love horror. They love horror
10 Candles
and all of its ways. And they love my setting in our game. So what I said was, we should play this game that is a horror game that we can still set in this cool part of my setting that you guys are already interested in.
Yeah.
So in that way, it kind of pays to make your setting system agnostic. And 100%. That way, because that then creates buy-in. If that's what
your players are into. If your players are like, don't know about the setting or the setting is secondary to them and they just love the characters and the relationships between them, a different story. Sure. But yeah, I get it. So yours is like, you want to run 10 candles for people. For me, it's Delta Green. Like, I want to run Delta Green. It's not going to work for our group.
No.
Simply not going to work.
Did, but it will not.
It will never work for our group. But I would love to assemble a group of our friends who are interested in Delta Green, because I have wanted to run it for a really long time, because I've only ever been a player. I would love to run it. But yeah, so we've got one other question that we'll cover, and then we'll move to wrap up, because we were like, oh, let's go for an hour, and it's definitely more
than
an hour. We've
already blown past it.
Yeah, well past it. Soprano Devil on our Discord server asked, for online tables, do you have any apps/tools to aid in time zone coordination and booking the darn thing? I'll say on one end, we're really lucky because the only person outside of our time zone is Drew, and it's only an hour difference. So it's real easy. In terms of coordination, one thing that I really like to use is a bot on Discord. We use a bot called Apollo. Apollo is a really good way of creating an event, setting it within a time zone, and then having people on a weekly, bi-weekly, and monthly basis RSVP to that event. And then Apollo will DM them and start a thread ahead of time notifying them, hey, you have this thing coming up.
It's a great bot.
It's a really good bot. Honestly, that's, I think, the only, if you use Discord, and I know most people do, Apollo is the way to kind of organize your TTRPG group if you're split across different time zones, because it sends you the reminders and everything. I really like it. We use it for, like, internally at Asians Represent, we use it for our meetings. We use it for our home D&D game. It's real good. I really like Apollo.
You know, one of the easiest things for me has always been, and this is not necessarily feasible for everyone, but if you can avoid playing on the weekend, do so.
Mm.
If you can play on a Monday, a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, especially those first three, the Monday through Wednesday, if you can play in those evenings, try to do so, because nobody ever has other plans on a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. They are either always going to something. They are either, you know, always going to karate on Wednesday night, or they do nothing on Wednesday night. No one ever goes, oh, my friends were, you know, wanting to go to the bar tonight. No one goes to the bar on a Tuesday. Like, you know, and if they do, do you want to be around them? Like,
that's true.
My point is just that with the weekend, yes, it feels like the most optimal time, because
there are always going to be conflicts, though, because people are like, shit will always come up, family stuff.
Yes.
Oh, you have an invitation to an out of town wedding. Yeah. Oh, you're going to go see a concert. Taylor Swift's in town, whatever. Yes.
The weekend is a siren's call.
If you can't do a weekday, yes, I get do the weekend. But if you have the ability to do a weekday, do it. Like,
yes,
the Pathfinder game that we had with Jeremy, Jackie, and Emma, it was on a weekday, and we were
always happened
unless there was an emergency. But it always happened.
That's understandable.
That's understandable. But it always happened. And our game is now going to be on a weekday.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
People schedule on weekends because they feel like that's when they're most free, because it's the weekend. The issue with that is that on the weekend, you're free for
everything.
Everyone wants to do stuff on the weekends. And a lot of people don't reckon with the fact that they're giving up a weekend, that they're giving up their Saturday nights. You know, especially like in my experience, being with new players, they don't really, yes, they agree to, oh, we'll play every Sunday night. You know, that sounds great. And then when they have to live that commitment, it's much more difficult.
Or imagine the Saturday night one, because you're like, oh, but then I can't go out. oh, yeah. I can't go do this and that. I would never play a TTRPG on a Saturday.
In my group, it's not always so bad when we have to do stuff like that, but that's because in my home game group, it has been curated to incredibly dedicated players.
Yes. But you don't start out like that.
No, you build up to that.
Yeah, you build up to that. So I guess our answer is for tools, use Apollo. For tips, avoid weekends if you can.
Yeah. And if you don't use Discord, or whether for that functionality or just anything in general, if you just don't ever use Discord, there are calendar apps. You know, we used Time Tree for a while. It was a mobile calendar app that was pretty good to schedule out everything, and it could send you notifications. You could sync up like a specific thing for your Google Calendar where you all receive, you know, that posting on your calendars, you know, so that you always have that, you know, upcoming.
Yeah. And we happen to just be on Discord all the time, although one player in our group is not on Discord all the time. And it did become a challenge.
Yeah, that can be a challenge.
But yeah, that said, that's it for questions. The end of our D&D game is not all doom and gloom. We have a lot of great memories from it, great moments that I will remember for a very long time. And I'm excited for the new memories we're going to make when we play Zombie Feast from Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I'm really excited about it.
I'm playing my character, Johnny Hotcock.
Johnny Hotcock, the goblin. I'm really hyped for it. And I'm just glad we have another episode of No Dice, No Problem in the books. Now, that said, we do have two announcements. One, I will reiterate, Drew and I will both be at Big Bad Con in September. Very excited. We will both have dyed hair. Drew, you've already dyed your hair. But I will be dyeing my hair for Big Bad Con.
Oh, fuck
what,
yeah.
What color? I don't know. We'll figure it out. I'm not sure.
You should
color.
Do the exact same as me.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do the same? I don't want to do two colors.
Or you do it inverse. You know, by September, this might be one. It'll probably be one solid color.
Okay.
This was fun for like the first go of this.
It's not the first time you've dyed your hair too.
No, I did a lot of bleaching and dyeing in early college.
So I'm gonna dye my hair. I don't know what color yet, but maybe we'll talk about that as an Asians Represent community.
We vote.
Yeah, you know what? That's what happened last time when I dyed my hair.
What we do is we assemble three options, two that you want and one that you really don't want, but we don't say which one's which.
Yeah, but you're going to tell everyone. You're going to be like, yo, vote for this one. Daniel hates it.
Yeah. I will seduce everyone's loved ones and I'll mention it to them and they'll start bringing it up.
You got to vote during family dinners. Vote.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're going to go to Big Bad Con. It's going to be Daniel and Drew go to Alcatraz. That's what we're doing there. But yeah, we're going to be a Big Bad Con. And then speaking of voting, any awards? Asians Represent is not nominated this year.
What a crime.
I feel like the best podcast category needs to be evaluated because I think actual play needs to be its own category. Because there are a lot of TTRPG and media discussion podcasts that, and not just ours, that kind of gets left out. Though I'm not complaining, we've won twice.
but we could be the three timers.
We could be three times, yeah. But I am also nominated for Best Family Game and Best Rules for Avatar Legends alongside some amazing creators. So if you are so inclined, please vote for Avatar Legends because I think that would be really awesome.
Listen, voting for the president is important, but it's not as important as the Ennies this year. You need to
it's not
get
as important
out
as the Ennies.
Of your fucking seat. Go to the poll. You got a Pokemon. Go to the polls, and you got to vote. All right, you got to do it. You gotta. If you don't, you're morally corrupt.
Drew, are you gonna wear your Ennie medals to
of course I am. Of course I am. It's a shame that I only have the one, because I wish I had the pair, like a pair of truck nuts. You know?
Were you so you have the one because you joined us at that time?
Yeah, no, I guess. I was there for when we won the first one, but they didn't give out.
I have one. I'll bring it to you.
No, okay, that's great. I remember it being an issue the first time we won that they didn't give us enough for everyone.
It was 2021. You don't have the 2021. You have the 2021.
Yeah, I have the 2022.
2022? Did we win in 2022?
Wait, what did we do?
2021.
No. We won 2020 and 2021.
Yes, we won pandemic year.
Which was the most important year to win.
It is. Because there's a lot of anti-Asian hate, and we won at the height of anti-Asian hate.
Yeah. We took advantage for clout, and we won. Anyways, go out there, vote for whoever.
Vote for whoever you want, but Avatar Legends,
yeah,
best family game and best rules. Y'all are awesome. And
I'll say you can vote with your conscience, but you know I'm lying. Don't do that.
Avatar Legends. And yeah,
vote along our party lines, please.
What the party lines of the Earth King. one other thing is that Asians Represent is going to be on hiatus soon. After episode 75 of the show, that is our season finale. We're gonna take maybe a 1 or 2 month break from our normal content, but no dice, no problem. We'll continue.
Yeah, we don't take no breaks.
We don't take no breaks. We don't take.
To be
no
fair,
breaks.
We have a month long break between each episode. So
well, we might be going. We might be going twice a month.
I'll just do it. Yeah.
Twice a month, but shorter episodes.
Theoretically,
but you know, we just talk. But yeah, that said, Asians Represent will go on hiatus episode after episode 75. But no dice, no problem. We'll continue. Who knows when we'll take a break? We'll probably take a break from No Dice, No Problem when we hate each other, because it's so easy to record these episodes.
So I think we should go on break.